In this episode, we have principal product designer and co-founder of Front, Ben Peck.
What does it take to run a conference? And new discoveries of the week?
Thunder! 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 Thunder!
Welcome to Thunder Nerds. I'm Brian Hinton.
And I am Frederick Philip von Weiss. And you are listening to the Thunder Nerds, a conversation with the people behind the technology that love what they do and do web good. And in this episode, I believe we're going to be talking a little bit about conferences and product design. Brian and I just went on an interesting conference, right, Brian?
No.
Wait, what?
Yeah, we just went recently to the front end conf in St. Pete. Some pretty amazing people there. Aaron Draplin, who I completely fanboyed all over.
A little bit, yeah. That was an amazing conference. So many great people there and great learnings. Rachel Smith did a lot of cool stuff about all of her cool JavaScript wrangling and animation, yeah. Working with Canvas and some of the new stuff that's going on with CodePen. So things like that are pretty cool to pick up when you go to conferences. Today we're talking to a guest, kind of knows a bit or two about conferences. We have a returning guest back for a little bit more pain. Let's go ahead and welcome principal product designer and co-founder of Front, Ben Peck. Welcome, Ben.
Hey.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me back on, guys. It was great last time. Looking forward to talking again this time.
Our absolute pleasure, sir. The red carpet is rolled out. Love to talk to you a little bit more and find out about Front and talk about some of the learnings that happened from this year and review that a little bit more in detail. But we should probably rewind a little bit and give some context if you haven't listened to the episode with Ben before, and we'll add a link to that in the show notes. Ben, where do you work currently right now? You're at a company titled Needle, correct?
Correct. Yep. So,
can you tell us a little bit about Needle?
Yeah. So Needle is it's an advocate marketing cloud. So basically we help brands such as Nike, Adidas, Reebok. We have about 40-ish brands that we're helping right now, but it's essentially a shopping assistant chat tool that lives on e-commerce sites. So it's a really fun product to work in, and with all the talk that's going on right now with messaging and bots and all of that going on, it's a pretty fun product to work on.
So it's like a personal shopper for in chat form, basically?
Yeah, so think of if the retail experience, if you're going shopping for something, say you need some new clothes and you're going to Gap, when you walk into Gap, you kind of know a little bit what you want to buy. Say you're looking for a jacket or something, so you go look at jackets, but there's someone there to kind of help you, hopefully an expert, someone that knows what they're talking about, not just like where things are. But it's very similar. So like, you know, you're looking for a jacket online. When you go on shopping online, it's very similar. You go to a store, you're looking for a jacket, and you're looking through the jackets, and our tool basically kind of what we it's an invite. We call it an invite. Basically, something pops up in the corner of the screen saying, "Hey, is there anything I can help you with?" And usually, they're a jacket expert, and we have this really awesome targeting tool where, if you're say on Adidas and you're looking at basketball shoes or running shoes, if you're in running and we give you an invite, we actually have an expert that's a running expert on the other end. But if you're in basketball and an invite comes up to chat, it's a basketball expert. So basically we're targeting you with somebody with an expert that knows what they're talking about and can give you helpful advice as you're trying to buy products.
Catered for that audience.
Yeah.
Have you integrated any sort of like AI technology? Are you guys doing that where you have like, you know, come up and help direct them initially and then it switches over to an actual person as the conversation progresses and it's necessary? Or
We have it's not necessarily an AI. We do have some kinds of AI on the back end. So on the back end, the experts use a tool called the Advocate Console or the Product Expert Console that we have. And there's information that it serves the product expert. But on the front end, we don't ever serve like a bot first. And then if the bot can't answer their questions, we hand them over to a human. No, we don't do anything like that. We do have another tool that kind of lives in tandem with it called Answers. So say you're looking, there's two different types of people. There's like the really outgoing people that want to talk to people. And then there's like the more passive kind of people that just are looking for information but are willing to like ask a question. So we have another tool called Answers that if you just ask a question, you'll get an answer back within a minute from a real person. But it doesn't start like a full-on conversation. So you can kind of passively ask questions if you want, or you can actually have like a more in-depth conversation. So we're not...
Cool.
We're looking into bots right now. We're playing around with it to kind of see how that works. The whole bots versus humans is kind of an interesting debate right now.
Yeah, I'm not sold on it, really. Yeah, I kind of think that bots are... it's not... The way they're implemented now, it's not that new compared to what I remember as a kid. I don't know if either one of you remember Sam, the Sam bot that used to be, I think it was on Windows. It was like Sam I Am was the play, why it was called Sam, and you could ask it a question, and it would like keep track of everything that you're saying, and it would respond based on your answers. So, and that was like, I don't know, 10 plus years or more ago, and all the chat bots I see now, they're equivalent to that. So I'm not sold on it yet. I think that the way you guys are going a little bit where it's an actual person kind of makes more sense, because that way they're actually getting, you know, a real response from someone who knows what they're, you know, knows about the product and everything.
And I think for this environment too, it kind of calls for it. It's appropriate.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. And the other interesting thing I saw about Needle, I'm sorry to get, I'm like jumping off the track of what we're talking about, but the SEO stuff, it looks like if someone searches and comes in, you guys pull in that search info and like communicate that through the advocate who's working with them. Is that right?
I don't know if I fully understand the question. So you're saying, say that again.
So I search for looking for a bag that works is what the graphics shows. And then I click on the link to coach. Right. And then the chat thing that would pop up would populate it based on the search criteria they use to get to that page, or
to a degree. You can search through questions that already exist. So say I go to coach and I'm looking through bags, there's a tool that we have that you can search questions. Say you have a question, you can start typing in your question, and it'll start populating with questions that have already been asked, and then you can ask those questions. And then you can get served an advocate after that question. It says, do you want to continue the conversation? And then you can chat more. Does that answer your question? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. That's you answered it.
Okay.
It makes sense.
Yeah. The whole bot thing just isn't, it feels like we're going back to the whole like Windows Clippy days.
Which they're bringing back.
That's great. Great.
I love that paperclip. That thing was awesome. What are you talking about? That was my buddy.
Wasn't there a dog one too? There was a dog too, wasn't there?
I feel like there was a dog.
His name was Mr. Woof Woof. I'm making that up. Hey, Ben, I wanted to ask you, has the conference changed your work environment in any way? Do people treat you any different? Did you get any more of a kind of influencer gravitas about you now that you've put this on 2 years in a row consecutively, successfully?
Do they roll the red carpet out at work for you now?
Not necessarily.
Do they call you Big Peck, like anything like that?
No, they all do know about the conference for sure, and a lot of people wear our front shirts around the office, so it's like my cloning machine is working around here. Everyone just is supporting front. I don't think it's really changed like how people look at me per se at my at Needle, but yeah. It definitely is like helped them knowing that I have a good pulse around product design and product management. They do kind of look come to me with more questions in a general format rather than very specific to what Needle does. But yeah,
I'd imagine because people understand now that you have an understanding of what's going on as far as putting something like this together and good understanding of what those conversations are to those subjects within the conference. So to talk about the conference and people that have no idea what we're talking about. So Front, the product design conference for user experience designers and product managers in Salt Lake City and Park City. You are the co-founder of Front Product Design Conference, which is frontutah.com. I'm always looking for these kind of events to go to help me with a few things, right? Connections, grow my understanding of the future of the industry, and equip me with the knowledge of things that I didn't know that I needed to know, right? So how do you sell someone to go from, say, Florida to Utah to go to this conference? What is in it for me? What am I going to get? How do you sell me to say, hey, Frederick, get a ticket on JetBlue, buy a ticket to Front, and this is what you're going to learn.
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually.
Why, thank you, Ben.
Yeah, this year we got about 20-ish percent of people from out of state, and we kind of ask ourselves that same question of how are these people finding it outside of Utah? 80% of the people that attend Front are from Utah, and they know us already from the local events that we do already, that we do monthly through the Product Design Association. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But how do I sell someone from far away on coming to our conference? I think what makes us unique from that perspective is Front is a different kind of conference. If you look at the conference landscape right now, there's not many conferences out there that are fully focused on product design and product management with in-house teams that are working with cross-functional teams. There's a lot of conferences about web design in general, about front-end development, about like the conference that you guys mentioned earlier, and kind of best practices per se. We're really about helping designers in-house within a tech company be better designers and work better as a team with product managers and the project teams that they work with, that they work on. So I think that's really what makes us unique and what would make someone fly out to Utah to come see the event. I think really a lot of it has to do with just the speakers that we get to come out and their notoriety and their knowledge, and just wanting to learn from them in a personal setting.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have some big name people that people know, obviously they'll want to hear them, just like Brian pointed out So you said 20% of people are from out of state. So I want to read a statistic. In 2016, and I'm quoting here, in 2016, we sold out with over 600 attendees from 5 countries and 28 states across the U.S. So again, that's 20% of people outside of Utah. Can you explain that number and how you had such successful metrics here? I mean, that's a pretty big deal for the second year of a conference.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we were blown away by the support that we'd received. I mean, that first conference, to be honest, not this year, but last year, in 2015, it really was a trial run to see if we could actually do a conference here in Utah and if the support would actually be there. From just purely from your question of like, how do, would people actually fly out to Utah? It's not like the mega hub of tech like San Francisco or any of the other big cities, or New York, name any other big city. But so what I, and that definitely is like humbling for us to be able to have that many people support us. So that first year really was we got the word out. Nobody knew about it. We kind of had to convince those 350 people to come that first year. And when they came and realized the legitimacy of the conference that we were trying to put on, it kind of spread like wildfire here in Utah.
Like word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth to the people here in Utah. And I think that spread a little bit farther than we thought it would. We had people coming from other countries was just baffling to us. Like, we actually asked them ourselves, how did you find out about Front and what was it that drew you here? And they actually loved it quite a bit. And it had to do with that focus of it being more on product design and product management.
How did they hear about it?
They heard about it online, and they heard about it through Twitter, basically. We don't do a ton of advertising, to be honest, for Front, mostly just through our Twitter account at Front. And we did a little bit of advertising in a few other ways, but really it came down to just searching for a product design conference, because we're one of the few conferences that are focused on product design and product management. So we rank pretty high on Google. So
yeah, awesome. I have two questions for you. One of them more serious than the other. I noticed at Libby Gardner Hall, there's a giant organ there. Will you be playing that organ at the event?
Ben retort.
I wish I could play that organ, because that would be amazing if we just like rocked out like a rock band plus an organ. Just that would be.
I could see you doing that organ, Ben.
Yeah, you should totally
start practicing now.
Play that organ. Yeah. And the other question, I was curious, I noticed that you have actually some big, kind of, to me, big name sponsors on your site. You have Overstock.com and Balsamic are sponsoring, I guess, next year's event. How did you get those sponsors? Did they reach out to you, or did you know someone? I'm curious.
So Wade Shearer, Front isn't just something that I do by myself. I should make it clear that. So Wade Shearer and Andrew Branch are my partners for Front, and Wade is the one that kind of heads up our partnerships with sponsors, and mm-hmm. he just kind of reaches out like a madman, and these companies find out about us. They know the audience that they're looking for. So Balsamic, it's very much in-house product designers that are using that product. So they know our audience would be perfect for them, as opposed to other conferences that that just focus on design, visual design, and that bleed into kind of product or to print design, or agency conferences. They see a lot of appeal for our conference.
The conference is in May, correct? Every year?
Yes, May.
Have you thought about kind of aligning it with ski season when you already have people going to Park City? Because Park City is a huge skiing destination. So tying it to a month where it is skiing season, where, hey, you're already here, go to the event. So you already have probably a lot of people in our industry could afford to go to Park City for a vacation to go skiing. So you could always tie it to something like that. Why May? And if you will entertain my question, have you thought about doing something like that to align it with something else that already brings people to the state, specifically Park City?
Yeah, I mean, Park City is definitely a very well-known city here in Utah because of the Sundance Film Festival. It's actually got some...
Went there for my honeymoon for those reasons.
There you go, that's pretty awesome. It's funny that you bring that up because this year we just announced that we're going to do some workshops. And we're actually going to do them in Park City. So in January, we'll be doing some workshops. To be more specific, January 5th and 6th, we're going to do workshops that basically is an extension of Front. So Front itself is a speaking conference. So it's mostly just speakers and panels. And there's no break-off kind of workshops, or it's not multi-track, it's all single-track. So in Park City, basically we're kind of playing off of the Wasatch Front and Wasatch Back from the mountains. We're doing the Front in May as a speaker conference, and then the things that you learn at Front, we take to Park City and you actually put them into practice, and you try to. You try to learn how to actually do what they're teaching at Front. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I totally get the idea of doing those workshops. I think, one, it's the perfect time to do it, to refer back to my question, and two, since you have all those people, it's a great opportunity for everyone, not just you putting on the workshop, but for the people that are already there in town, to have that experience to say, oh shit, you know what, this is going on? Oh my God, I'm definitely going to do that because this is associated with this conference. So yeah, that sounds great. Let's kind of jump into a little bit more about the learnings of the conference. After 2 years of doing this, Ben, you must have acquired some pretty solid logic and thoughts on, one, how to throw one of these conferences, two, how to acquire talent for these conferences, and three, the information that you got from this is probably overwhelming. And then I would say the last thing, I know you said you did a little bit of speaking, and I don't know if you're doing any speaking at this conference as well. So could you kind of go over some of those points?
So it has, to be honest, it's been crazy. Ever since we've done Front, it feels like we've gone the amount of knowledge that I've been exposed to has amplified like crazy. I used to have to work pretty hard to go learn either online or try to convince my boss that they should give me $3,000 to go fly to a conference in San Francisco, or New York, or wherever. And that's part of the reason why we created Front was, Andy, Wade, and I were tired of convincing our bosses to give us thousands of dollars to go to a conference when we felt like we could just bring people to us. And it was slightly selfish of us. What's that?
I love that approach. You're like, I don't want to spend that much money. You know what? I'll just do it myself and make everyone come to me. I like that. I like that.
So true. But that's really been a big benefit to me. I mean, that first conference was just super humbling to hear, like, people like Marty Kagan and Peter Merholtz that have a big names in the industry in product management and product design, UX design, and their willingness to come to Utah and share that knowledge with everyone here. This year was even more humbling, having very well-known people and companies here in Utah, the VP of product from Domo and many of the leaders from Pluralsight here locally, as well as designers from Airbnb and like Keenan Cummings and Kat Watkins and Bob Baxley, who worked at Apple and Pinterest. And I mean, to name them, I can't name them all right now, but
Johnny Ive.
That's next on our list. To be honest,
there would just be a big white room. I imagine it's a big white room. He's sitting on a chair on the stage, and everyone walks in. It's very hushed and quiet.
It's funny because after...
Can you make that happen?
After every conference, we survey our attendees and we ask them who they would like to hear from. And Johnny Ive's on the list, so we're just going to have to make it
happen. Oh, really?
Yeah. Boom. It's done. They asked,
Ben, I wanted to ask you about... you have all this content now on Vimeo for free, right?
Correct, yeah.
So... Let me ask you this. I think it's great that you have all that content up there. Some people would say that this is an opportunity to make a dime, to earn a clam on having this content be paid content. Like, you have all this great content, you have to pay to see this to be at the event. Why not have if you already paid for your ticket and you attended the conference, here's a passcode. Send out a passcode. But if you haven't, pay $5 and watch all these videos. Has that opportunity come up in conversation?
Yeah, it has. I think it's an interesting topic, 'cause we feel, going back to your original question, one of your earlier questions about how do you convince people to come to Utah to hear this information and learn, they're giving that away is kind of a bit of a marketing and advertising tool for us, that we can show the rest of the world the type of things that you could learn at front. And to be honest, I think there's only so much that you can learn from just watching a video of it versus being in the audience and having the conversations with people in person afterwards, whether it be the actual speaker or whether it be the team that you're there with.
I couldn't have said that better myself, Ben. I think you made that point perfectly. Being there really is where you're going to get so much value from, not just what they're talking about, not just the connections that you make there, but the context of actually being there supplies so much more to be able to absorb the information.
Yeah, exactly. And that I can't express more what the difference is between being at an event and not being at an event and just watching it from afar, because I've done the watching from afar for years. But when you're actually at the event, it's a completely different experience, and something that kind of gives you a little bit of a high, in the sense that you're just ready to leave a conference inspired to go just change and be better at what you do.
Speaking of the experience though, how is the food at the event?
I'm hungry, Ben. Tell us.
How is the food? Yeah, it's delectable. To be honest, food
to give
like,
you some context, Brian and I went to a conference very recently, the front end conference, not to keep talking about it, but I'm going to keep talking about it. And they had some kind of cool dishes every once in a while. Like you would go out, like after every speaker, there was like, oh, there's a tray of this, there's a tray of that. Yeah. And, you know, I know sometimes too that's tied to the event location, but you know, it was pretty nice to have those kind of delectables, if you will. But go on, how was the food?
Food is one of the most difficult parts of actually running a conference, is finding food that everyone loves, that is enjoyable, that doesn't take a long time to get.
You're getting into local food or
the first the
like local restaurant food. Or?
Both these years we've done food trucks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and everybody's loved it. What we do is we give out these little like wooden nickels to every attendee that comes. This year was actually pretty cool because we kind of went all out and we gave everyone a Cotopaxi backpack with front nickels, like wooden nickels and some other little goodies in their bag.
Did you say fanny pack or backpack?
It's called a Cotopaxi. Cotopaxi is a brand. It's like a It's like a backpack, an outdoor backpack actually.
I really wanted you to say fanny pack.
Yeah,
a fanny pack.
I remember how popular those were. They're still popular in theme parks, by the way.
It's funny that you bring that up. It's funny that you bring that up because we thought about. Just for fun, because for a funny sake, to do fanny packs with front on them, and to get into the event, you actually had to wear your fanny pack. We thought that would be pretty funny. To the food point, we gave everybody tokens, and then basically each day they just turned in a token and got a meal from the food trucks. We brought the trick was to have enough food trucks that the lines weren't too long, but everyone loved that part of the conference, that we weren't just like box lunches or boring food, but we kind of brought some of the local cuisines to the conference as well.
Man, there's this great food truck that comes to our office every once in a while. Brian knows what I'm talking about. I love getting a nice juicy burger here and there, or you know, sometimes getting a taco, but you know, food trucks are good.
Moving on from the conference though, I'd really like to spend a little time on to talk about PDA the PDA Product Design Association. I'd like to, like, how did that get started? Was that before or after Front?
Yeah, so that was before. So we've been doing the Product Design Association for I'll say about 8 to 9 years. Andy actually started a small chapter of the IXDA here in Utah and had been doing it for years on his own. And then Wade kind of helped chip in and for a few years. And then I came along and found them right before we changed it to the Product Design Association. But yeah, we've been doing that for a really long time, and it's been it's really what kind of grew the community here in Utah, the product design and product management community here in Utah. We would do monthly events where we would just invite someone that was working on a product team here in Utah to just come share what they do, what challenges they go through. And it really helped everyone in the community kind of just band together to help one another be better at what we do.
So is it more of a local thing? I mean, obviously it's Utah, but is it more your local area that attends, or do you get people throughout the state showing up?
Oh, we get people throughout the state. So there's four big major areas within Utah, and we spread out the events between those areas. And we have, when we changed the name to Product Design Association from the IXDA chapter, we included a bunch of product managers because they didn't really have a group, but we'll do a bunch of events downtown in Salt Lake City, and then we'll do some events in what's called Lehigh of Utah, which is kind of a big tech hub now, with Adobe being there, Vivint, Ancestry, Nuvi, a lot of the bigger Workfront. They're all kind of moving into Lehigh.
Never heard of Adobe.
You've never heard of Adobe?
Yeah, what's Adobe?
I don't know.
You mean like those mud houses?
They came out with this thing called Adobe XD, sort of. You might want to check it out. But
Adobe XD, never heard of it.
Yeah. Bringing up Adobe, they actually sponsored this year's front, the XD team, and came out and was like showing, giving them a preview of XD at the conference, which was pretty cool.
What do you think of it? Did you like it?
I think it's come a long ways, and I like that the approach that they're doing with just not just bundling everything that they've done with other programs into it immediately.
Into Photoshop?
Yeah, exactly.
make Photoshop yet again. Like, uh-huh. It's crazy. Photoshop can, like, edit GIFs. It can edit video. It can prototype. It's insane. Everything is nuts.
Yeah. Remember, too, when they had Image Ready? And yeah, all those things. What were you saying, Brian?
Oh, I was just going to say that we're getting close to the close, so there's a couple more questions I'd like to ask, including a kind of a new thing that we're doing. I'm throwing this on you, so I'm going to answer first, but what's something interesting that you've discovered this week? Something in tech, it could be a new beer you tried, you know, anything really. So give a quick little thought. And my interesting thing that I actually discovered today, which I'm like, finally, Google is catching up to AOL. Gmail and Inbox are now supporting media queries in CSS.
Whoa, okay, since when?
They just implemented it, launched it today, I believe. But yeah, it's awesome. Awesome, awesome.
So you're saying that the Gmail app or the Inbox app, whichever you're using, is going to now have be able to leverage a responsive email?
Yeah, yeah. Gmail and Inbox, yep.
That's fucking cool. About time.
Yeah, they caught up to AOL. AOL actually supports the most of any of them, their client, which is hilarious. Of course, they've been around the longest. I guess you could assume that they would.
Yeah,
I don't understand why it took them so long to do that. I was wondering if there was some kind of logic behind that. Like, oh, we don't do that because X, Y, and Z, and that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it was kind of people look at Gmail as text and email as text focused, and like Google just was waiting to see if like it made sense to move forward on it. Plus, I mean, we know we've interviewed a few people from Google that they work a little bit differently. That way they decide projects is kind of like, hey, are we going to do this? I have this idea. Let's do it type approach. So. Mm-hmm. It could come down to something like that. Who knows? But I'm glad that they finally have it. I'm going to throw in another one that was interesting today. Is Edge is the most power efficient browser. I found that out today. They lay the last 8 hours playing a video as opposed to like 4 and 5 for Firefox and Chrome, which that's pretty impressive.
Oh, that's neat.
Huh. Yeah. So all right. I'm going to throw it to Frederick now. Let the guest have a little more time to think and put Frederick on the spotlight. Something interesting you discovered this week?
Absolutely. Ben, just think. So my turn. yes, let's see. There's a few interesting things. I could always talk about, let me go into two things. First thing I'll talk about is Atom, and then I guess the next thing I'll go into is some of the interesting features in iOS 10. So I've been going through Scott Tilinski's tutorials on Atom quite a bit, and I just finished them all, and they're super cool. And I don't know if anybody out there uses Atom, whatever your favorite IDE is, whether it's Visual Studio, their new IDE, or if it's, I don't know, you're going back to Coda, or you're hardcore Sublime Text for some reason, or maybe you're using, what is it for PHP that everybody's loving, Brian?
PHP Storm, I think.
Storm, yeah. So it might be, yeah. And if you're using PHP, that makes a lot of sense. But so I'm totally into Atom right now. I'm geeking out on it. And like I said, I went through some of Scott's tutorials, and I've been going through some packages, and I found some neat little things. Like there's one called Pigments, Pigments, and Pigments is a cool package. It will go through your CSS or SAS, and it will highlight the actual color in your editor so you could see the color of anything. And also, to go a little bit further, if you have variables of colors, those variables will also, like if you have a word that's hypothetically red, the word red will be that corresponding color red. So while you're scanning your file, you can actually see the color. It's a cool little feature. I don't know if anybody knows, one of the cool things about Sublime that I think caught a lot of beginners' eyes before was the minimap thing, which was pretty cool. You see, you could have a little minimap. So there's minimap, literally M-I-N-I map, which is a package in Sublime, or excuse me, a package in Atom, so you could get that. And there's a lot of other cool little things that I found in it, like I'm sure everybody knows how to use Emmet by now, which you could just type out a few pieces of shorthand of code and they pop up, and that's a cool feature in Atom. And then in iOS 10, just the cool new text features, where I send Brian a text that says fart, and then I use the effect to make it balloons. So I've been having a lot of fun just sending Brian funny texts like that.
I just find, I don't know, maybe it's I'm just at a point that I think that stuff is just pointless, but I cannot see myself really ever using that. I like the whole where you tap and you can like something someone said, or, you know, interact in that way. I can see, like, in a group chat, that's cool, but sending fireworks and
Brian, back up. So you're telling me that there's no value in me chatting you fart and then having balloons pop up? I think you're gonna have to revisit that. So okay. Yeah, exactly, you see my point. So now that we've went through mine and yours, Brian, let's go to Ben.
We're staring at you right now, Ben.
The one
literally, I guess figuratively, but
the one thing that I just recently found just barely was variable fonts. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but like Adobe, Apple, Google, and Microsoft and others are now embracing like an open type variable font. So instead of having to do media queries with every like certain width, you could change the width of the font and all the different white weights and styles with a variable font. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but
I've heard about, I think I remember glancing at this. Well, what is it exactly like? Do you know enough that you can elaborate a little bit on it? I'm not completely sure I understand
how
you described it. I've heard of it. I thought I saw an article, but go ahead.
Yeah, so you know how fonts will have the different weights, and in CSS, you have to use query different. You have to pull different fonts. They have now just one open type variable font that you can just call to be a different size, no matter what size you want it to be. So say a font, and this, I may be totally wrong because I haven't put a whole lot of effort into finding it out, but the way I understand it to be is that you could create any level of width that you would want for a font. So when it comes to the bold, instead of faking it or putting an outline around it or whatever, or relying on a font to have only one level of bold, you can have like infinite levels of bold. Does that make sense? So you can make it as
Yeah, totally.
But it's actually done correctly rather than messing it up by trying to fake it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. I think I kind of get it, but I'm trying to understand so the font. Weird. You have to look into this. This is really cool. Looks like it's actually been an ongoing thing. I'm looking at an article right now on a list apart, live font interpolation on the web. So I'm wondering if this has been going on for a while and they just now, like, you know, it moves a little slow where they have to figure out how they're going to do it, and then suddenly they launch it. And I'll have to check this out. Thanks, Ben. I didn't even. Yeah, this is awesome.
I think they made an announcement, those companies together, like Adobe, Apple, Google, and Microsoft, and others have made an announcement to support it better, basically. I think it's been going. There's been a push for it, but I think that there's finally getting some support, which is good.
Awesome.
That's my thing. I hope that was a good addition to...
That was a good thing.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. And we'll add a note in the show notes. We'll add a note in the show notes? We'll add a link in the show notes to communicate that so everybody else out there could take a look at what we're talking about and pull that into their own repertoire of knowledge and get a better understanding of that. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, Ben, so hey, man, we're at the ending point, and I just want to say that it's been great having you with us again and reviewing some of these things that you're doing over in Utah and talking about the conference. And, man, I couldn't be more happier for you and the success that you're having with the conference. And it seems that this year was exponentially more successful, and it seems pretty obvious that you're going to have that same success next May, and with those workshops in January, that will help underline and punctuate the quality of the conference, and also to append the PDA with that as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to be on with you guys, and I'm glad that you guys invited me. So I hope so myself. So cool.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, thank you.
If you have a question or topic you'd like us to discuss, send us your text or audio questions at connect@thundernerdsho.com.
Also, hit us up if you're interested in sponsoring the show, and don't forget to pimp us on iTunes with a like or review.